I am 5. 29th of April 1958 to the 28th of April 1959. Over. Bangers and Matches by Rebecca James. I remember waking early on the morning of my 5th birthday. The harsh wind howled outside, rattling the panes of my bedroom window against their aging wooden housings. As I slid out of bed and padded across the cold vinyl floor into the bathroom. Nobody else was awake yet. It was that glorious time when I was king of the house. I took the opportunity to dip a finger into my dad's half-used Brill cream and slide it through my hair. I squished his shaving brush into the little pot of shaving cream and contemplated how grown up it made me look. I was now 5, after all. I also contemplated the huge amount of trouble I'd be in if he found me like this, and speedily put it back in the cabinet before daring to put it anywhere near my face. I was always in a hurry to grow up back then. I'd given up sucking my thumb a while before, obviously, and told a cautionary tale to anyone foolish enough to do so. Despite this one slither of superstitiousness, I was generally a daring young boy. I was one of those children who seemed to have no real fear of things, despite however much others tried to warn me of the possible dangers of my actions. Of course, when you're 5, you're pretty much invincible anyway, so that was okay in my book. As if to illustrate this, racing across the mudflats with friends was one of my favourite pastimes. I felt sure that not only was I nimble enough to not sink, but also my wiry frame, unlike that of a few others I won't name, would ensure my safe arrival on firmer ground. Obviously, I was right, as I am here now to tell the tale. But not all of my childish gambols paid off. One particular memorable autumn afternoon that year resulted in the mother of all telling offs, courtesy of my dad. Whilst playing kick the can in the Vennel and imagining myself as the next Scottish forward, not beyond reach, I felt, judging by their usual dismal World Cup performances, I hoofed an old bean tin straight through Mrs. Kinsley's window. Unfortunately, on this occasion, my nimbleness deserted me, and I ran directly into the old post box in my haste to escape. This resulted not only in me being caught and receiving an impressively nasty bruise on my forehead, but also in me being pulled by the ear to see my dad for the biggest tongue-lashing of my short life. After he duly paid for the window to be repaired, which he reminded me for many years after this event, I was grounded for a week, or a decade as it seemed to me back then. I decided at this point that perhaps being a professional footballer was not my future. Although, who knows, even at my current age, there may still be an opportunity to get into the Scottish squad. Another key event that stuck in my head from that year was Bonfire Night. It had always been a tradition in our family that when you reached the grand old age of 5, you were allowed to pop down to Old Man Winters and get the penny bangers. So clutching a handful of coins, I strode in, a confident eyebrow raised as I pointed to the little sticks of pure explosive pleasure behind the counter. As Old Man Winter handed them over, I smiled delightedly to myself. Even now, I still get a rush of excitement when I think back to the thrill of the gunpowder and that distinctive aroma. Obviously, now that they're outlawed, as indeed they probably should be, but every November the 5th takes me back to that particular year when I felt like a giant amongst men, purchasing my own little lump of explosive. There's really nothing like that feeling of knowing you have the opportunity to destroy everything, then deciding not to do it, or perhaps deciding to do it. Either way, it's the thrill of the choice that I have always enjoyed. But let's move on. Christmas that year, I prayed, as I did for most of my formative years, for a matchbox car. I yearned to increase my tiny collection of those little toys and spent many a rainy day wheeling them noisily in figure of eights across the sideboard. "William, stop that right now! You'll scratch that wood!" And flinging them kamikaze style off the cliff edge of the best settee. "William, if I see track marks on that fabric, you're for the high jump, young man." My dad would usually acquiesce, as indeed he did that year, and under our tree would be the familiar little box wrapped in shiny paper, usually accompanied by a bag of marbles and a comic. It was a simpler time back then, unlike the garish consumerism of the decade we now live in. I honestly do think that despite all of the intervening years, of which you will no doubt read about shortly, sometimes I'd really just like a matchbox car again for Christmas. Maybe I'll put it on this year's list. Perhaps even including it in this memoir will result in a host of little boxes arriving at my door come December, sent from various fastidious well-wishers. Please do not mistake that for a request, dear reader. Take it instead as the wistful musings of a rather nostalgic author. As my fifth year marched on, I found myself thinking of the future, as young boys often do. I'd started school, enthusiastically, it has to be said, and a world of possibilities seemed to be opening up before me. And so, as winter turned to spring and the buds appeared on the trees, my sixth birthday loomed, and as I snuggled under my sheets on the night of the 28th of April, I wondered what might lie ahead for me in the coming 12 months.
Under, A Thud on the Roof, by Jane Ellis. This was the year that something got out, or in, depending on your point of view. I need to state here and now that this was not something that, at the time, I found frightening, disturbing, or even thought out of the ordinary. I also need to insert the following disclaimer. Please do not get your hopes up that you're about to encounter any strange or terrifying manifestation that prefigures or explains events in my subsequent life or work. Nothing that exciting or convenient is going to happen. What did happen was that I began to hear noises. Noises that I'd only heard when I was dreaming started to occur when I was wide awake. These sounds first made themselves known in the waking world a couple of weeks after my fifth birthday. Among my presents had been a pair of second-hand binoculars, no doubt spotted by my parents at a church jumble sale and bought as an ideal gift for a boy of 5 with a keen interest in the natural world around him and an uncanny ability to misplace things. Hence the gamble of forking out for a new pair that might be lost within days, not being one they were prepared to take. The binoculars were brass, with a moss-green leather covering, and came with their own matching leather carrying case. While obviously well used, they were still in good working condition, and I was delighted with them. I had gone up to my room to fetch them when I heard a thud on the roof overhead. There was a pause, and then the sound of footsteps crossing the slates with a sharp clicking sound. I recognized it instantly as the same noise I had heard in several dreams during the preceding weeks. There was another pause, and this was followed by a sudden skittering, sliding sound moving at speed towards the roof edge, as if whatever it might be was experiencing some difficulties with suddenly finding itself in the physical world. Needless to say, I dashed out into the garden to conduct a survey with my binoculars, but could see no sign of anything. Over the course of the year, the noises returned in various forms, sometimes slow, deliberate pacing, sometimes quick running footsteps, on one occasion with a distinct dragging limp, as if some kind of injury had taken place, and in different locations, on slate roofs, wooden sheds, and the top of corrugated iron lean-tos. The only common factor was that they only happened when I was alone. Sometimes they would seize the opportunity of a fleeting interval when whoever I was with had briefly left, racing from one side of a shed roof to the other, and, after what I can only describe as a skipping sound on reaching the edge, abruptly ceasing. This was the year when the phenomena were most frequent. As I got older, there was a decrease in activity, maybe partly because I was allowed to spend more time outside exploring my surroundings with family or friends, visiting the nearby burn, or seeing what bird species we could spot, something I was always eager to do. I was also spending more time at friends' houses, or they would be visiting me. The amount of time I spent alone decreased. But at some point, the footsteps would return. I can only put my acceptance and lack of alarm at these happenings down to the fact that what I experienced seemed to fit perfectly with how I expected the world to be given the children's fiction I was surrounded by and the Bible stories that I was familiar with. With advancing years, disquiet began to creep in, bringing troubling questions about both myself and the events themselves. If I accepted as correct my belief that whatever this was had made the jump from my dreams to the real world, how had it done it? No idea. Why had it done it? No idea. And more concerning, what the hell else might, already had, come through? I remembered the dreams that had preceded all this, but worried about all those dreams I couldn't remember, that were just there at the edge of awareness on first waking, but evaporated immediately I attempted to recall them, gone completely and forever by the time I was fully awake. As more time passed, I began to ponder the nature of memory and to conclude that it could be inaccurate, unreliable, duplicitous, self-serving, and self-sabotaging. In light of this, I had to question my memories of how this all started. Could I trust my recollections? That would be a no. Had I dreamt the whole thing? No idea. Had I invented it all as an explanation for something I was hearing which actually had a natural cause, albeit one that was completely eluding me? Fuck knows. At one point, I was alarmed to find myself considering if there could be any connection to the birthday binoculars, even though they were surely long gone, lost or left behind in some move or other. Then I realized I had only had about 4 hours sleep in the last 3 days and couldn't remember the last time I'd drunk anything, so was probably dehydrated. I pulled myself together, drank a glass of water, and went to bed. With the passing of time, the intervals between incidents grew lengthier, and years could go by with nothing. I would reach points where I believed they had stopped altogether. I would question whether that last incident, 3 or 4 years ago, happened as I remembered. Had I embroidered the memory so that what had been twigs or leaves blowing across roof slates was now recalled as a sound resembling a tap-dancing goat? And yet... And so it continues skittering down the years, this possibly non-imaginary, imaginary friend, sometimes raising questions, sometimes, okay, I admit it, strangely comforting, seemingly content to reveal no more of itself than the sound of its footsteps. This was the year that something got out. Or in, depending on your point of view.